Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight. Every cover of day. Whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, on this lovely Sunday evening, August 12th, 2007, to the 234th episode of Dave's Gone By. And talk about whirling around at night. I mean, okay, we've had a nice day or two of temperatures and stuff out there, but whoa, a tornado grows in Brooklyn. Who would have thunk it? And go figure. This week was the first time I'd ever seen the Al Gore film, An Inconvenient Truth. And so that was lodged in my brain watching that, because the big old tornado that happened just the day before, I had seen it. And, okay, you can sort of connect or not connect and do all this weather stuff. I believe what he's been saying. I believe that there's a big problem with global warming, and that there's something about all these cars and all these factories and all this stuff going on in the atmosphere that's happening now and has been for the past 100 or so years that wasn't around in caveman times or in Babylonian times or even in medieval times. And it has to do something, and something not very nice, to the ionosphere and the atmosphere. I think the most compelling thing that Gore says in the movie, aside from the basic facts that he's throwing at you in this rather overlong, relentless lecture, is that whenever they've tried to poke holes in the theory, the way holes were poked in the ozone layer, that it was always false science being thrown at true science. In other words, you get the car companies and you get the chemical companies, and they throw all this money at a study that's trying to disprove the theories of global warming and the theories of the fact that we're poisoning our atmosphere and poisoning our waters. So they try to muddy the discussion. And they try and say, well, here's a study that says global warming isn't really happening, and that it's actually getting colder, and that certain pollutants are good for our system, and all that. And by the time we go through it and say, well, no, that's a completely false study, and it was thrown together by a very interested activist group that's close to the tobacco companies and close to the medical industry and close to the gas and oil industry. Well, by that time, already these news articles have run and the TV stations have jumped on the so-called other side of the question, when there really isn't another side of the question. It's bad. You know, what we're going through is bad. And yet, Let's also look at the other side here and say, well, there was a tornado in Brooklyn. You know, we're talking about the tsunamis that have happened around the world and what happened in New Orleans. And who ever heard of it? But 108 years ago, there was a tornado in our area, again, in Brooklyn. So one could say it's not unheard of. You couldn't point 108 years ago to global warming and SUVs and say, well, that's the reason there was a tornado in Brooklyn in 1890-something. So, okay, I mean, let's not totally jump on one particular bandwagon about this. But I will say, the thing that clinched it for me, if you remember the stormy, stormy, rainy weather that we had in this area this past week, was you had huge, thundering storms with powerful, powerful rains. And instead of it getting quieter after the storms, or I should say cooler after the storms, instead of, as we're used to having, a machaya, as they say, it gets nice, it gets pleasant. You wait for the big rainstorm to come to break the heat and the misery and the humidity. And this time, do you remember what happened? It only got worse. It actually got more dismal and humid and hot and oppressive after all the rain. And I can only wonder either that's God's doing or mankind's doing, but it was a very, very weird thing. So I don't know. The nice thing is that 3 days later, we kind of got our first taste of fall. Remember that night when it went down to the 50s? And it was cold, but it felt really good. So, I don't know. Maybe the answer is everybody start using your spray cans a whole lot and get your cars to emit a lot of crap out of their exhausts in the winter so that it'll get really warm with the ozone stuff. And then let's all be really organic and eco-conscious over the summer so that it cools back down again. I know, there's got to be some kind of way to manipulate all this. I'm not sure how. I'm not a scientist. What I am is a radio host, a radio personality on WGBB Freeport AM 1240. I've been on the station since October of 2002 with this little program called Dave's Gone By that is brought to you by some wonderful sponsors, and I've got my guest co-host Jeff Goodman in the studio to tell us and help tell us about these fine, fine sponsors. Hello, Jeff Goodman. How are you? Whoops.
Yep.
What's that, Jeff?
What does this say I hear about we're trying to ruin the ozone now?
Well, I figure maybe it can work, as I said, in this opposite reaction thing. So, like, we want the ozone to be bad.
Dave, if you're not careful, I'm sending Al Gore to your house.
Oh, my God. If there's anything bigger than the global warming problem, it's his ego. Did you see that movie? Did you see An Inconvenient Truth?
Yes.
I mean, okay, he made some great points, but they enshrined the man. They made it about him half the time, which made it somewhat more interesting, I guess, because it wasn't just a lecture. But you figure, I thought they were going to carve his face on a mountain.
No, come on. But we can't just, don't make fun of the, I bet there's someone on the phone talking about
the ozone. Well, why don't you do our sponsors while I talk on the telephone?
I could tell them about mortgagesrock.com.
Yeah.
The place where you can get mortgages and not only help yourself to a mortgage, but help your family and friends to get a mortgage of their own, and you can make a couple of bucks off of that, too. And then there's also the Copy Kings of Broadway, Hewlett Minuteman Press, right across from Lowman's, and next door to the new Lowman Shoe Store.
That's right. And let's see, did we do Performing Arts Insider yet?
We never do Performing Arts Insider, Dave, because that's the Bible of Broadway. And we have to wait for you to talk about Performing Arts Insider.
Well, excuse me.
Because you are very important to Performing Arts Insider. Without you, we would have no knowledge of what went on and off Broadway in cabarets and the schedules. It's just everything you want to know about Broadway is there.
It's perfect.
And off Broadway in cabarets
and to find
off Broadway and.
Yes, okay. And to find out more, go to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Remember, it's a hard copy magazine. But to subscribe and to find out more information about it, you can go to their website, PerformingArtsInsider.com.
It's a virtual subscription to a hard copy.
So let's see, we did Hewlett Minuteman, we did Mortgages Rock, right? You did Mortgages Rock.
Yeah, and we forgot the little one.
What's that stinky little place that does parties?
I don't know. No one ever calls.
Well, who should they call if they try to, and why should they call?
Well, I guess if they have a party coming up, they might want to call Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Fancy Schmancy Balloons, huh?
And that would be at 517-397-3229.
797-3229. And just for the heck of it, even though no one's going to call, if they did call, what would they get?
A big kiss from me.
And what would they get for themselves that they would actually want?
Well, they could order a party. They could order a party decorated. I could even organize an entire party, convention, whatever they want for them.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
We got strippers. Yeah. We got babies.
You're going to do a strip. Well, I guess I could arrange for a strip.
I can arrange. If you want me to strip, I'll strip too.
No. But thank you for the offer, but God knows no.
Not you.
Oh, okay.
I don't do that for free. It's by the pound, baby.
Well, then I couldn't afford. Oh, no, I'm not going to. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to try and be nice. You be nice today, and I'll be nice today, and we'll both be nice. Okay?
I've been nice. I haven't cursed since, like, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I won't forget that part.
That was with my cousin.
Yeah.
We were cursing cousins at that point.
Oh, I like that. That's very good. Hey, let's tell people what's going to be on this episode of Dave's Gone By, because we've got a lot to do, a lot to move forward on. First of all, we're going to be talking to a fellow named Chris Epting.
No.
The one, the only Chris Epting.
Chris Epting?
He's written 8 books, and they're basically about...
Has anyone read them?
Well, I've read one of them, and they're fun. Now, don't be making fun of the guest before we start getting the guest on here.
I still love Five-ish Finkel, don't worry.
Well, Five-ish was beautiful. But then, come on, let's get into this particular guest.
But Chris Epting, I mean, who would know him?
Epting. What he does is he finds pop cultural artifacts all over the country and tells people where they can find them. Where is that famous diamond bra that Madonna wore? Where is Abe Lincoln's hat? Where is Archie? Well, everybody knows.
If I lose my shoes, can he tell me? Where are Marla Maple's shoes?
Actually, you would write to him and ask him, and he might try and go find that if they're in some museum or a shoe museum, or maybe still in her house if that becomes a museum. That's what he does. And he did a book called Led Zeppelin Crashed Here, where it talks about all these rock artifacts. He's gone to the places where famous album covers have been shot, and he's gone there with his camera and taking them today, like
where
the Morrison Hotel.
Where was Abbey Road shot?
Good. He had to go there. That was like place number one to go and walk down those.
Did he walk down Penny Lane?
No, because there was a barber there taking photographs, and he didn't want to have a copyright issue. So anyway, Chris Epting is going to be on the show talking about his books and the places that he's been and the places that he can tell us all how to go to. We're also going to be doing Inside Broadway.
I love when we do Inside Broadway.
We're going to be talking about Broadway news, some big Broadway news, as well as I'm going to review an off-Broadway show called Tom Crean, Antarctic Explorer, that's playing at the Irish Repertory Theater off-Broadway. We'll also be talking, which we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, about the demise of the Weekly World News. Sorry, guys, it's on its way out. And then,
even though it's still at the 7-Eleven near you.
Well, it was last week. I don't know if it'll still be this
week.
It's
never going to die. There'll just be old issues there.
And speaking of death, and speaking of, it's kind of a last-minute thing, but we also have to do a farewell to old Merv. You know, one of those people, he may not have the notoriety or the hipness of a Letterman, and he may not have the fame quotient of a Johnny Carson, but
he did.
He's one of those people who, if he weren't there, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing the way we're
doing
it.
He was one of the richest people in America, too.
Well, yeah, too.
He was worth well over $1 billion.
Well, because he had the casinos and he had the horses. I mean,
he had Wheel of Fortune,
Jeopardy, man. Yeah. But let's talk about him. We'll save that towards the end. So we're talking Merv Griffin. We're talking Inside Broadway. We're talking to Chris Epting on this episode of Dave's Gone By. Please, folks, so much to do. Don't go away.
Dun 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 dun.
Well, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, mortgagesrock.com. God has a plan for you, giving your friends and family mortgage loans. Learn how at mortgagesrock.com. Fully licensed in New York State and in heaven. They'll teach you the ropes so you can climb Jacob's ladder to high, high, high commissions. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Everybody point and click. Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies, plus 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman, their service can't be duplicated.
Hi, this is Chris Epting, the author of Led Zeppelin Crashed Here, the Rock and Roll Landmarks of North America, and you are listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Sunday night, and I'm very happy to have a special living human artifact on our show tonight. He's someone who collects and finds these artifacts that are scattered all over America, all over the globe, and he likes telling people where they are. Everything from where is Madonna's famous brassiere to Lizzie Borden's axe, or where do they keep the Lone Ranger's mask? Now, of course, most of us will say a bunch of things are in the Smithsonian Institution, and that's true, but they're also scattered in these cool, out-of-the-way places all over the place, and Chris Epting has written a bunch of books at this point telling folks where to find the rock and roll oddities, where to find the baseball amazing things that happened over the years. And in one of his books called The Ruby Slippers, Madonna's Bra, and Einstein's Brain, he tells the location of America's pop culture artifacts. And he's got a brand new book coming out called Led Zeppelin Crashed Here, with a lot of specific rock and roll trivia stuff. So Chris Epting, first of all, welcome to Dave's Gone By. Welcome to the neighborhood.
It is a pleasure to be in the neighborhood, Dave. Thanks for having me, man.
Anytime, anytime. And so when did you really first start getting so interested in pop culture to the point where you go to these places to seek them out and wonder where they are?
I think I trace it back to a point when I was a kid growing up in Westchester County, New York. I was about 8 years old. We did a class trip out to a place where there was a barn where Washington had stopped during the war. And I remember being in, it was just kind of a little small, not that big a deal place, but inside there was a map where he had stood over and said, you know, we'll go here or whatever. But I remember thinking then that, you know, George Washington, the guy on the dollar bill, had actually, like, I said to a friend of mine, he breathed the air in here, you know, and I found that very compelling to think about historic figures and where they walked and tracing footsteps. So I think that's where I always kind of trace it back to. But from there, in school, whenever we'd learn about things like the Hindenburg, I remember seeing that famous footage. I wanted to, you know, they would tell you how it happened and why it happened, but they never told you what was there today if you wanted to go visit. So that set me off on this other kind of mission of locating the sites where things happen. I mean, I was started out, wrote a book called James Dean Died Here, and it was one of about 600 places in the book where James Dean died. And I get hundreds of other places related to pop culture.
One of 600 places where James Dean, he only couldn't have died.
No, I mean, in addition to that one where he died,
even a cat on the
other kind of pop culture place.
Yeah.
That one kind of represented all of them. But, you know, where movies were filmed, where crimes took place, just that whole idea of placing yourself in the context of a historic event.
And
that's what my books sort of tend to do, is lead you around by the hand around the country, to all these little nooks and crannies around the country where something happened or where you can locate an artifact.
Did you ever get kind of a weird Sylvia Brown kind of vibe when you were in, say, a really heavy crime location?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you don't. I mean, certain places, it's like if you go to kind of tracing the route where the Zodiac Killer in the Bay Area operated, or Son of Sam, or, you know, famous, I always find in hotel rooms where, and with this rock and roll book, it involves staying in a lot of hotel rooms, say where Janis Joplin died.
Yeah.
And Graham Parsons and all these people, John Belushi. In those instances, whether there was foul play involved or not, I always find the vibe to be very strange. And I'm a bit of a cynic about a lot of that, except on the nights in those rooms where there is something palpable in the air and something does feel charged in the room. It really does. And that's a kind of become a sort of an exciting thing for me and my family as well in some of these instances.
And have you ever felt that in a really positive way? Like you've been to, I don't know, a stadium where an important home run was hit? Or
you know what? Yes. And I will tell you that for me, those places are where ball fields used to be. Major League parks, well, where I'll go, say in New York, where the Polo Grounds used to be, or Ebbets Field, or in Philadelphia where Connie Mack Stadium used to be. My son and I will take our mitts and a ball to these kind of vacant lots and just kind of throw a ball around and think about what it was like when Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig played there. And yes, in those kind of parking lots and apartment complexes today, I swear sometimes if you stop and listen, I can almost hear that sort of distant crack of the bat and sort of a long, you know, far gone crowd somewhere and echoing off. So I think ball fields, to me, they're sort of like Civil War battlegrounds. They're so steeped in so much history that happened in such a short period of time that it would be hard to imagine the ground not absorbing something, you know, in the way of the feelings that were there once. You know, baseball stadiums and millions of people would go there in the course of 40 years or so.
True.
And again, so I like to think there's something left back there. And yes, it's a very positive feeling when you think about it.
Well, one of the things that you did was specifically go to places where rock album covers were shot. Are there any particular memories or really cool places that you visited connected to famous albums?
Yeah, well, you know, as a product of the 70s, back when you still had compelling album covers and lyric sheets and liner notes and all that, I loved albums and I miss albums enormously. There was one, the Morrison Hotel, which was a famous Doors record. I actually spoke to the photographer, Henry Diltz, who shot that, and he told me this story about this old place called the Morrison Hotel in a very seedy area of Los Angeles. So when I went there to reshoot it, it's kind of like the Bowery in New York. It's a bit rough, but not too dangerous, just kind of a lot of down-on-their-luck guys. And I remember finding that hotel where they shot it in the window, and just, you know, what Jim Morrison was telling him that day. And again, you know, Morrison left this world very early in life. So you think about that young Jim Morrison forever pictured in the back of the Morrison Hotel album cover. So when I reshot that, I definitely got a little bit of a twinge of something there. And a couple other ones, too. I went to...
Well, actually, I want to break in because
sure.
When I was in Paris a few years ago, we visited Père Lachaise, the famous cemetery,
right.
And went to Jim Morrison's grave. And I don't know if there was any kind of weird vibe there, just a lot of people leaving beer bottles and flowers.
Yeah.
Like, they have to have a guard posted there for, in case people deface the place.
It's one of the, I mean, someone told me recently, it's like the fourth most visited shrine in Paris or something like that.
I'm sure it is.
Which is extraordinary when you think about everybody who's in Paris, that this American rock and roll singer made such a mark, you know. And a quick Jim Morrison note, I also discovered recently there's a bathroom in West Hollywood, California, of some Doors note, where it used to be the vocal booth for Jim Morrison when the band cut L.A. Woman, the album L.A. Woman. It's a restaurant today, but back then it was the Doors' studio and offices. So if you go in the men's room today, it's actually, there's only one restroom there, so it's a unisex bathroom. His handwritten lyrics to L.A. Woman and a gold record are on the wall there. And again, you think about that in there, and it's pretty amazing to think of him in there actually recording that very famous track. You can never hear it again, I don't think, and not think that, wow, it was right there where it was realized, you know. So, but you know, back to the album covers, too. Sure. There was a Pink Floyd album cover called Wish You Were Here with two guys shaking hands on the cover. One of them's on fire. I traced that spot to a Warner Brothers lot in Burbank, and I loved that record as a teenager. And so, again, to be there and reshoot it today, and in the book there are hundreds of pictures and stuff, but I take the old album cover and the new one and line them up together so you can see what it looks like.
So I assume you also visited Abbey Road at one point. I mean, that's a pretty obvious one.
I did that one. It's not in the book because the book covers North America, but I did that one just because it's obvious, but you got to do it. You know, it's one of the most famous rock and roll scenarios in history, so I still think it's fun to go do that. And again, think about, you know, what was it like when the Beatles showed up early that morning to shoot that cover. So, but, you know, that said, there are a ton of Beatles sites in the book from, you know, this is the book Led Zeppelin Crashed Here, from where, you know, George Harrison was the very first Beatles to ever visit the States in 63. Before his bandmates came over, he visited his sister. It was probably his last anonymous summer ever spent, and he played in the local band and killed about 6 weeks in the middle of Illinois. And you can go stay in the very same bed where he slept when he was there. It's a bed and breakfast today.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And just, you know, these things, if you're a nostalgic sort of person, and I kind of am, you do get to, your head starts to spin. It's like, yes, they were physically, as you said, you're breathing the same air.
Yeah.
I don't know if molecularly that's happening, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it puts you right there, but I think that it also, you know, it forces you to kind of think about what their impact was. You have great, you know, debates in the car about what band was better or what ball player was better. When you go visit a site, even if you don't get kind of an ethereal feeling, it does sort of force the issue and makes a good conversation, because you reconsider their lives and careers and what they brought to the picture and everything. So, you know, it's like when you go to where James Dean died, it's fun to kind of reconstruct that day and then just kind of on the drive home think about that guy's impact, you know, on the world 51 years later, you know.
Well, we are talking with Chris Epting, the author of Led Zeppelin Crashed Here and Roadside Baseball, and the book that I've been thumbing through the past few days, The Ruby Slippers, Madonna's Bra, and Einstein's Brain. That's a Santa Monica Press volume. And this was, you know, I was going to fold down just a couple of pages in the book to ask about, because I thought they were cool and interesting.
Sure.
And as I'm thumbing through it, every other page I'm thumbing down. It's like, wait, no, I got to mention that one. I got
to
mention that.
Well, what you just said, though, taps into what I want to be with these books. My theory is that for the reader, there are a lot of books people can choose. So if they pick up your book, I don't care what page they open up to, I want it to be something compelling, whether they were originally interested in it or not. I want it to be something that's quick and easy and fun, and that you come away entertained but a little bit smarter for stopping on that page. And I always look at the final proof of a book, and I'll open it 100 times and think, okay, is this page loaded with enough stuff to keep people interested? So I appreciate
also,
you saying that.
Oh, sure. And it's cool that you have a lot of photographs, and that makes it.
Well, that's like, yeah, well, you got to do that too. And I shoot a lot of them myself, and that's kind of the fun. I know, selfishly, I like books with pictures too, and to get a sense of what's there, especially if you take the time to go somewhere, you want to know what you're looking for too.
Well, speaking of places to go, like in this book, The Ruby Slippers, you went to, and I never knew this existed, the Cockroach Hall of Fame.
Yeah, down in Texas. You know, you mentioned the Smithsonian in your lead, and it's true. That's America's, what do they call it, the nation's attic, or America's attic, and there's so much stuff there. But there are these other kind of crazy fringe museums around the country that I thought it would be fun to pay homage to, and that's one of them. I mean, that guy who runs it down there is really funny, and he's really into it. And this isn't some spoof. This guy takes these cockroaches and dresses them up, and yeah, I think he's done Letterman a couple times, too, where he'll dress them up and create little dioramas and stuff, and it's a riot. And again, it's just it's got this kind of Only in America quality to it, that somebody would go to the length. You know, again, there are other great kind of museums, from the Louisville Bat, you know, Louisville Slugger Museum and things like that, but the Cockroach Museum is so strange and so uniquely American, I wanted to put it in the book.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the Louisville Slugger, because one of the things that I also took pride in when reading this book about strange places with strange things is that I've been to a few of them, and rather proudly, where I've dealt, like, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Louise Sacco, who is the curator or executive interim director of the Museum of Bad Art, and you talk about her, and my wife and I, a couple of years ago in Los Angeles, went to the Museum of Jurassic Technology.
That's in this book, too. Is that place wild or what?
I love it. Tell a little bit about that.
Well, the reason I've got it in this book is A, I've gone there for a couple of years, and it's a very hard place to define. The thing I put in there was an exhibit of an artist who creates art that's located within the eye of a needle. And you look through a magnifying glass, and within the eye of a needle, the picture I have in the book is of the Pope, and he's got Goofy, a Disney character, Goofy. But the museum itself is just a very strange collection of ephemera that's kind of quasi-scientific, I guess. You have to go there to believe what the Museum of Jurassic Technology is all about. I describe it in the book. I mean, what was your impression? Could you come away and describe it briefly to somebody? I mean, it's hard to put into
much
words.
Of it is intentionally not real. Much of it is designed to be almost like a spoof, but played really straight. It's almost like the Weekly World News.
Right, but it's got a very kind of provocative angle it takes, where it's done in such a, like, in a, you know, authentic way. If you didn't know better, it feels authentic. The language they use to describe things, the kinds of exhibits, they really kind of use, they ape all the sort of usual museum descriptions. But like you say, it's all ersatz. It's all kind of made up. But again, it's done kind of lovingly and I think with a certain scientific eye. And there's sort of a beauty to it. I mean, some of the exhibits I think are fascinating, whether they're real or not.
I think they make a certain percentage real or real-ish.
Right.
And the rest are completely, like, are fabricated.
Of different creatures and things they've discovered. But again, there's an art to it that I think is really beautiful. And that's a very cool little place there. I always tell people to go there when they visit.
And here's a place. Of course, there's condiment museums and places. You've got the Mustard Museum.
Yeah.
It's 3,250 different types of mustard.
Mustard.
And then somewhere else in the book you also mentioned, where is the largest bottle of ketchup? Ever?
Yeah, in Illinois. I love those things because people, I think, automatically, they might roll their eyes and think, whenever you get into kind of the world's largest, and there's a whole bunch of them in this book, that it's just kind of a kitschy tourist trap. But a lot of times those things are created as a tribute to local industry. I mean, out here in California, you've got the world's largest artichoke, because that's their bumper crop in Castroville or artichoke.
Oh, I should mention, when we say that, we're not talking about actual, real planted artichoke.
Right, the
or
big
bottom.
Roadside right. Statues and things. And, you know, those sorts of sculptures and things usually are very indicative of what goes on locally. So you've got, you know, the world's biggest strawberry in the middle of Iowa, because it's the strawberry capital of the western, you know, midwestern United States. And so I like learning about the history of those large statues. It's a great photo opportunity, but it also tells you a lot about the region and the locals who live there.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, when I was in Minneapolis, I did not get to the Spam Museum, which just tears me up.
Yeah.
And now nobody
what?
Can get to it because of the bridge. But
yeah, well, no, it's a fun museum, and I mean, they get great press and a lot of visitors. Minnesota's actually got a lot of world's largest things up there too. But the Spam Museum, when you find a product museum, there's one for Dr. Pepper. Down in Texas is, of course, Coca-Cola World in Atlanta.
Right.
You know, they're very commercial on the one hand, but they're also, you know, they kind of celebrate the ingenuity of these kind of American dreamers from hundreds of years ago who decided to make a soda or a product, you know, a candy or something like that. So I think those places can be fun when you find, you know, in upstate New York, I've got where Jell-O was created and the first Pepsi counter down in North Carolina. Those are all in there because I think that they are, again, they're uniquely American, but they are interesting pop culture artifacts.
And when you've had the Spam and the Jell-O and the ketchup and all that, you even make room for the American Sanitary Plumbing Museum.
Can you believe that?
A museum devoted to toilets.
There's this devoted to toilets. There's a museum for everything, it seems. It makes for a fun road trip. And whether you go there or not, I just think it's funny that people think to open these things. And, you know, again, and you learn a lot about the country, again, and a lot about local industry with museums like that, as silly as it seems. And admittedly, it is silly on the surface. But again, you go there, and you can actually learn a bit of those places, believe me, I've found.
Oh, well, I mean, if you move further on into the book, away from some of the roadside stuff, like the giant clam in Pismo Beach, which is pretty wonderful if you're a Bugs Bunny fan.
Right.
The big Pismo clam. But you go into historical stuff, and I can't even believe that this is there. In Tuscumbia, Alabama, Helen Keller's water pump.
Yeah, everybody knows that iconic water pump when she learned to speak, and if you go visit her birthplace and home there, the water pump is there. It still pumps water. So, again, if you go and crank that thing up and you get that water on your hands, you've all of a sudden attached yourself to this great American, this historic person, you know, and a moment where she learned about the communication. And I think, again, those are the moments that make you kind of forget a lot of the silly stuff and have a certain poignancy to them. It's really kind of nice after you do it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and what's weird is like a page, the kind of book that this is, a page away from that, you have somewhere in Alabama is a typewriter that belonged to Adolf Hitler.
Honest
to God, you have
it. Scope, yeah.
I mean, it's very, very cool and very bizarre. And in the Dwight D. Eisenhower Library, this is another page I folded down.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Well, yeah, they've got, I mean, I love presidential libraries and museums because you don't just get stuff related to those people who they're dedicated to, but all the stuff they collected over the years. And there he's got the FDR, the braces FDR had for his walking disability.
I mean, you have an amazing picture of them. FDR's leg braces.
Yeah,
like
they're very primitive looking.
Yeah.
I don't have a picture in front of me. But again, that's a real critical piece of Americana right there. I mean, a lot of people didn't realize that the help that he needed. They kind of photographed around it so he never looked ill, you know. But he required a lot of care of movement. And you see those braces, and all of a sudden you think about where those things were and the events they were part of, and it really takes you back.
And speaking of events that happened, there's an actual axe that belonged to Lizzie Borden.
Yeah, we all know the nursery rhyme, but you go visit the museum up there in Massachusetts, and you can see the act of what she did. You can say,
that is the weapon. That's the weapon that she allegedly, because they couldn't convict her.
Right, on her parents.
That
is the weapon. You can stay in the room. I mean, that's the thing. People don't realize all the American myths and legends and stuff. People don't realize that there are artifacts and places you can stay related to it that really put you in the thick of it. And I mean, that axe, again, who doesn't know that nursery rhyme? And to see it, it's a very chilling thing. It's sort of like a couple of weeks ago I showed my kids the gun that Booth used on Abraham Lincoln. And again, you look at this little item and you think, my gosh, it altered the course of history. This little piece of metal, the axe is this, you know, again, very kind of primitive, almost, you know, Indian-looking tool. And you think about what it did and what it inspired and who knows about it. And it's just, it's amazing when you stand there in front of these things.
Well, we're finishing up our chat with Chris Epting, the author of a bunch of books of all this pop cultural stuff. Do you have a website where people can go to order your books?
I do, actually. There's a website I've worked on for a couple of years called HamptonLandmarks.com, which is a lot of fun. I do it with Hampton Inn Hotels, and it lets you print out some free road trips, and I've got free samples of all the books on there, and I think it's a really fun travel site. And then I have an author site, which is ChrisEpting.com.
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 So as I said, you know, in the top of this interview, there are things, you have a special section in this book about the things that are in the Smithsonian and everything.
Right.
And Mr. Rogers' sweater.
You've got to give them their due, because, again, they've got thousands of interesting things.
I mean, Sesame Street things. And
yeah, the Archie Bunker and Eve, the chairs,
you know, yeah. But I think the most interesting story that I want to close with is the fact that it almost sounds like a horror movie title. They saved Einstein's brain.
You know,
please tell us about this.
It's crazy. Well, you know, he was a professor at Princeton, and he did leave his brain to science, and it made its way around the country in so many different pieces and slices. It's arrived at the Princeton, it's there today at the hospital at Princeton, and it used to be, you can actually, and I mean, again, I believe you can always talk your way into anything. You can request to see slides of it, and they will, on occasion, bring it out and show you an actual piece of the genius's brain. He wanted it studied forever, and it's kind of part of myth and lore, but it really does exist in Princeton, right, where he taught and where he lived and everything.
But you mentioned that when he died, they cut it up into...
Yeah.
Did they cut up the whole brain or just a little section of it into 240 pieces?
Well, my understanding was it wasn't the whole thing, but it was a sizable chunk of it. It wasn't just a little part.
Wow.
And they did want to study it. They did want to see what this guy's makeup was. And I don't know that they ever quite learned that, certain he had a capacity for something else, but he wanted it studied too. But it does sound kind of ghoulish. It is something like out of a 50s horror movie or something. But it was true, and it does still exist, and it is something people have studied and looked at. But to my knowledge, nothing's ever come out where they can say, you know, quantifiably, yes, he was smarter because we located this region or something like that. But it does still exist. It wasn't buried with him when he was laid to rest.
But in other words, when you go to the place, and it's in New Jersey, of Alexander, in Princeton, New Jersey, but did they have just a little piece of the brain, or did they have the rest of the chunk that wasn't cut up?
I think they've got all of it there, but I think all they've ever made visible is what's under slides. So it's a small piece, again, almost more like a lab sample that you would see under a flat slide.
Wow. Well,
it isn't like in Frankenstein where you see a jar of formaldehyde that was like Einstein's brain. It's way more clinical than that. It's all been, again, kind of sliced up and preserved properly.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you, Chris, for slicing up and preserving all these different pop cultural artifacts and places and telling people, A, that they exist, things that they wouldn't have even dreamed of were still around, and B, just to have fun and telling people how to visit them and that they're available and people can actually go and, I guess, either if they have websites or physically, go in a car and ask and see our heritage, be it really, really trivial and fun or be it truly historical.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, I really believe that people need to explore a little bit more than we do. In today's day and age, everybody gets sort of stressed out, you know, with work and their Blackberries and cell phones and everything. Sometimes you have to remember to take a little time and go get lost and go wander and get your hands dirty, and culturally speaking, and go learn about what got us to this point and where we're going. And all the kind of fun, you know, it's a good way to get off interstates, too, and to go to small towns and meet locals and eat at local places and do all those things that are fun. And you can learn things in those towns, too, you know. So I think it's important on a lot of levels to get out and travel around the country a bit. But no, I appreciate you taking the time to acknowledge it. That means a lot. And I know you do a lot of great work in this area, too, as I've read about. So I tip my hat back to you, too.
Oh, thanks so much, man. I guess the motto is, as Barbara Walters would say, take a little time to enjoy the view. That is the last time I will ever echo.
But you know what? It was appropriate.
Yeah,
I totally buy it. It totally works in the system, so thank you.
Chris Epting, thanks so much for being in the neighborhood.
Dave, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Look, the economy's tough. We all know that. Money's tight. Things are expensive. But business goes on. People still need to know what you do and how well you do it. There's promotion and word of mouth, but to reach a broader market and really get the word out, you gotta advertise. I suggest you advertise on Dave's Gone By. People listen all across Long Island and around the country on the internet. So if you have a product, event, or service to tell them about, buy a commercial or sponsor a whole segment of the show. Compared to print, the rates are super cheap, and you get a lot of added value. And you link your professional name to a special program with a loyal audience. Advertising on Dave's Gone By is easy, cost-effective, and fun. So get a piece of the Dave. Call 516-295-1511, 295-1511, or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Start your economic recovery right now. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, we're moving inside Broadway, ladies and gentlemen, on this episode.
Such a tight fit.
Well, Broadway's big enough to accommodate us, I think. I think we're Broadway viable, Jeff Goodman.
Well, we're both Broadway babies.
Aw, yeah, I like to think so. And especially when we do this segment Inside Broadway about all the news that's going on the Great White Way.
Well, what's happening? I'm dying to find out.
Excellent. Well,
yeah,
I know how much you liked Hairspray the show and
yes.
Hairspray the movie.
Yes, I did.
Well, there's another John Waters film that's going to be a Broadway musical.
Cry Baby,
yes. And for a while there was a rumor and they were working on it, but now it's getting a lot more definite. Cry Baby looks like it's coming to Broadway this coming spring in 2008.
Wow.
It's on the heels of such success, both for the movie of Hairspray and the show. It's going to try out at the La Jolla Playhouse in California in March. And it's got a score by a guy named David Jabberbaum, who writes for The Daily Show. and Adam Schlesinger, who's one of the writers for a band called The Fountains of Wayne. I don't know if you're from, not your kind of music, but it's folky, rocky, kind of cool stuff. Well, anyway. And the book, well, you know these book writers, Thomas Meehan.
Never heard of him.
No, okay, you can, now, come on, who's Thomas Meehan? Tell everybody.
Well, he wrote Annie, and then he helped write The Producers.
And he's working on Young Frankenstein as well. And then he's co-writing Crybaby with Mark O'Donnell, who wrote Hairspray.
Yes.
So, the story of Crybaby is it's a teen melodrama, a false one, a spoofy teen melodrama in 1954 of a bad boy who falls for the town's good girl. So look for Crybaby coming to Broadway musical in just a few months. Now, a rather different kind of a thing, but believe it or not, it's not a drama, and I don't think there's a whole lot of profanity in it. We're going to get November in December.
Yes, it's a Nathan Lane piece.
That's right. Well, Nathan Lane's in it. David Mamet wrote it. Mamet, the author of Sexual Perversity in Chicago, and Glengarry Glen Ross.
And someone else just joined that cast, didn't they?
That's right. That's right. From Roseanne.
John Goodman?
No.
Oh, that's right. Laurie.
Laurie Metcalf is
going
to co-star with Nathan Lane. What a hell of a cast already in November. It's going to start previews in December.
At the September Theater.
If only. No, it's the Ethel Barrymore Theater. She was in the September of her years, so maybe that would work.
That's a good theater for that, too.
Yeah, well, it's a play theater,
yeah.
Directed by Joe Mantello, so already they've got, like, the stars lined up for it. It's all about...
How could it bomb, is what we'll say.
How can anything?
And we'll ask in January, how did I ever get to Broadway?
Well, because it's David Mamet, but it's a comedy. It's a political spoof and farce about an incumbent president who gets, like, this corruption bombshell on the eve of his re-election. Or potential re-election. So, should be interesting. A play called November, coming in December, to Broadway. And now, what is this, Jeff? What do they call that?
Stuttering?
No, I'm not going... No.
Raspberry.
And a...
Bronx Cheer.
Bingo! You know why I'm doing that?
Because the Bronx Tale is coming to Broadway.
Good one, Jeff! Exactly right. Chaz Palminteri's show that was... made his name...
The movie.
Well, Robert De Niro directed the movie because he saw the off-Broadway show that Palminteri did.
That's right.
Of A Bronx Tale. And it launched his career about 15, 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And for years they've been trying to get a musical version of it off the ground to get onto Broadway. Didn't happen.
I can't imagine that, though.
Still not happening. But what are they doing? They're bringing back him in the original solo show, only now they're going to do it on Broadway. That's what they do now. They take the off-Broadway shows from 20 years ago, and now they premiere on Broadway over and over again. So it's going to run in a limited run from October through February at the Walter Kerr Theater, which is already reserved for that Harvey Fierstein show, A Catered Affair, that's coming in the spring. So Bronx Tale is a semi-autobiographical show about Palminteri's growing up in the Bronx and his tough childhood. And people, maybe if you don't know the name Chaz Palminteri, you know his face, and he was actually Oscar-nominated for Woody Allen's movie Bullets Over Broadway.
And what would your life story be called?
What? Sad, pathetic Jew? No, I'm not.
A five-town story?
Well, not really, because my childhood was in Brooklyn. So a Jew grows in Brooklyn, but they already did that off Broadway. So I can't steal that one. Not sure what it would be called. That's a good quote. What would yours be called, Jeff?
Who would care?
Yeah, that's a good title. Who would care? Featuring Jeff Goodman as himself. Now let's move way off Broadway. Way so off Broadway it's not even in New York. Guess what they're doing in Connecticut?
Theater.
Yes, but they're working together. Something that's
a good speed,
kind of difficult. Goodspeed, Long Wharf, Yale Rep, Hartford Stage, and the Westport County Playhouse.
A Connecticut Country Yankee Playhouse. And King Arthur's Court.
It's not a particular show. What they're doing is they're banding together to get more people to go to the theater in general. And they've created a website called C Theater Now. The letter C, Theater.
For Connecticut.
Now.com. Yes, for Connecticut. Half price tickets on the day of the show. You can get them online at that website.
But who wants to go to Connecticut for dinner?
Hello, it's Yale Rep, Hartford Stage, Long Wharf, and the Goodspeed, and Westport Country Playhouse. There's some pretty terrific theater going on in Connecticut.
Okay.
So anyway,
when are you going?
See it for half price. Makes it very worthwhile to take a long weekend or a midweek trip to Connecticut, see two or three shows at a time.
And that was ctheaternow.com?
C, the letter C, theaternow.com. com. And when I thought of, when I saw this, I was like, well, how come New York doesn't have this? How come
they do?
And yet it can do. Tell.
I just guess.
I assume they didn't. I assume you could go online at the TKTS booth or join these different theater clubs. But
actually,
you know,
I think you can print up your own tickets online.
Discount ones? I mean, you can also go to some of the major theater websites, and they have some discount stuff. But I had no idea that TDF has a very similar thing, that you pay like $30 a year, and you can see Broadway shows for about $25-$30, and you can get some off-Broadway tickets for $25 and under. And it's just by joining TDF for that annual fee. A lot different from just joining, you get those things in the mail and the half-price ticket clubs and all that. So had absolutely no clue until I started doing some Googling. So, folks, if you want to see some New York theater a lot cheaper and some apparently Broadway shows, you might want to check out TDF's website, tdf.org. So
that's an org, not a com.
That is correct. I don't know. Maybe they don't own tdf.com. Maybe they never wanted to. Maybe it's some kind of weird German.
No, it wasn't orgs for nonprofits?
Yeah, so they grabbed that. But everybody grabs anything they can, especially when websites are $8 a piece or something.
All those porno websites, you know they are grabbing.
Well, TDF, what would that stand for? It stands for... I can't even be... The first word I can't even say on the air. So.
Well, the first word could be two, then the F is...
Yeah, I don't even want to know. Anyway, what we do want to know is what I thought of a show I saw this week at the Irish Repertory Theater.
I am going to what you'll be seeing at the Irish Repertory Theater.
A show called Tom Crean, Antarctic Explorer, and we will explore it right after this message.
Oh. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
The best Broadway magazine just got better. More listings, more contact numbers, more inside information in Performing Arts Insider. And not just Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off, dance, cabaret, opera. As one dramaturg put it, Performing Arts Insider is a gold mine of information for the theater professional. 21 times a year at your doorstep, the whole world of theater, with 10% off for Days Gone By listeners. Visit PerformingArtsInsider.com or call 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Performing Arts Insider. It's Broadway the best way. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Performing Arts Insider, the proud sponsors of Inside Broadway. Well, I went off Broadway this week because a lot of things over the summer tend to be more off and off Broadway oriented. Don't forget, by the way, the Fringe Festival started this past Friday. So if you want to see hundreds of shows in the New York International Fringe,
and
check those out.
And low money for not a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, you can get those festival passes and see everything, or just one show each is whatever, $15, maybe $18. And of course, it'll run the gamut of quality. But, you know, you take your chances on some funny titles, and you never know. You might see the next Urinetown. But I didn't see any Urinetown show. What I saw was Tom Crean, Antarctic Explorer, not a Fringe show. It's at the venerable Irish Repertory Theater.
Which is doing some really amazing work recently.
Absolutely. Over the past couple of years, they've bolted up a step. They've really just somehow increased the quality of everything they do. They always had good acting, and they always, you know, but... something just happened. Something just clicked for that theater company. And now they've got a solo show that actually started as a fringe show a few years back. Aidan Dooley, who I'm assuming is an Irish person, I mean literally from Ireland, is doing a solo show about a little-known explorer named Tom Crean.
Was he Irish?
Oh, he's very much Irish. And he worked with Englishmen, though, because he went three times trying to get to the South Pole. He went off to the Arctic with Captain Scott.
The Antarctic.
Yeah.
You said the Arctic.
Oh, sorry, the Antarctic. Antarctica to the South Pole. And so he went with Scott and then also with Shackleton. And never quite got there, which is maybe why he's not as famous as Scott or Shackleton.
He never got there?
Well, he got to the Antarctic. Right. And he got a couple of dozen or a hundred miles away from the pole, but never...
Why didn't he get to the pole?
Ah, and therein hangs a tale. Or two tales told in the solo show by Aidan Dooley, where the first time he goes, and I didn't know this is how it worked. This is a lot of the show is very interesting in this way. It isn't that a bunch of people just set out, and then they all go, and they try and get to the pole.
That's what I thought.
No, what happens is they go in shifts. So a bunch of people will go about a few hundred miles, and then some will be left behind intentionally, not because they're sick, not because they're whatever. And by the time they get really, really close, to, you know, just a few dozen more miles, they're only taking four or five more people at the very end, and then everybody else goes back so that there's stations along the way back where there's food and provisions and all that. It's a really interesting thing, and always the leader of the expedition is choosing the people. It's kind of like your reality shows. Who stays, who goes back?
He got voted off the Arctic.
He got voted. He was like on the last eight, but he didn't make the top four in that first expedition with Scott. So close, and yet so far, but... Well, you
can't
find
the
out
last four people. The other four people go, screw that, I'm going with them.
Well, you do find out in the show that he was the lucky one, because when he went back, you know, he made it. The people who went off to the North Pole or the South Pole didn't do so well. So in that case, he was lucky, and he had this miserable, horrible experience. I mean, it's 90 degrees below zero Celsius in the winter in that area. Well, a couple of months after, he went back. He went on another expedition, this time with Shackleton, to try and get to the South Pole. And this time they got real close, but other terrible stuff happened. And he survived. And he ended up going to World War I, survived that, and then he opened up a pub in Ireland.
Well, you know what you call that?
What?
The luck of the Irish.
He had it. I mean, well, if he'd been really lucky, he would have gotten to the pole and become famous.
He would have hit the South Pole and went ding,
ding, ding, you know, paying off in silver dollars or whatever it is. It is an
interesting... Is the South Pole really like a giant arm of a slot machine?
I always thought so. I always thought, what, why
wouldn't
else
that
bother?
Be hilarious?
Is it...
And is it really red, white stripes?
It's a South Barber pole. We know that. Yeah. But it's an I mean, it's a very interesting story, and the guy is very personable, but it's rather long. It's 2 hours of a one-man show. He talks much faster even than I do in a thick Irish
accent. How's it possible to get this to you?
That way. And imagine that with a heavy Irish accent. And sometimes using words that you don't know because they're part of the lingo of what he's doing. So you're trying to stay with it, and other times you're like, okay, even though it's an exciting tale, you're like, all right, we know. We want to hear more a little bit about him hanging back and all the years he lived after all these explorations and what it was like thinking back on them and running that pub in the middle of Ireland, which, by the way, is still there. The South Pole Inn is still in a little place in County Kerry that Tom Crean founded. So
I guess
I can't,
he's dead now?
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually his appendix burst when he was in his early 60s. Just one of those things. Because he was in County Kerry. He got sick by the time they got him to a hospital. He died. Oh, well. Kind of like the death of Bessie Smith, only in an Irish... Bessie O. Smith. See, I can't get my fizz and my sizz down right now. But anyway, I can't really give a really exciting, like, go see this piece, unless you're really interested in the material, and then absolutely run and see it. It was a little too much for me to take in. I was also kind of tired.
But it was interesting.
But it was well done, and it's a good piece. And if you go see it, I don't think you'll be sorry that you saw it. It's Tom Crean, Antarctic Explorer, playing at the Irish Rep for a few more weeks, actually.
And actually not too expensive a show either, I believe.
I think Irish Rep keeps its prices pretty reasonable. And whatever they do at this point, it's kind of worth seeing. Whether you're outside Broadway or...
Inside Broadway?
We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
This is Julie Wilson speaking. On Days Gone By, WGBB. Hope you're listening.
Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Yes, welcome back to Dave's Gone By.
That is such a melodic tune to such a horrible little little thing we do here.
Well, what's wrong with Dave Goes Off? It's usually on a rant, although this is kind of a farewell.
Dave Goes Off on a rant!
Yeah. Except I'm not ranting. This is more elegiac, because we're going to say goodbye to the Weekly World News, that little newspaper that's been around for, gosh, I'm not sure how...
Entertained us with all sorts of bat boys and alien babies.
Right.
And just anything that could come from outer space and land here, or someone that was pregnant, or a baby with a monkey head, or...
Oh, yes. Two heads, or two monkey, or one red hair head, one monkey head.
Or co-joined twins, one's dead, one's alive.
Well, actually, that has happened, I guess, but the whole point was they didn't acknowledge the wink until recent years. So until more recent times, they said, well, no, it's all true. And then I remember picking up one at the grocery store a couple of weeks ago, or actually looking online at their website and seeing where there was some kind of thing about a futuristic society, and their language was CYALATYR. And then when I read it to myself, I was like, oh, okay.
Well, see you later.
See you later. I'm like, they're just pulling our legs now. They know they're goofing on us. Somebody out there is already winking it. But this is what Susan Reinhart of the Asheville Citizen Times wrote about the Weekly World News. People read it, and they got some kind of kink or kick from it. Most of us with half a brain knew it couldn't possibly be real. But then another part of our minds would secretly wonder, could it be true that the world's smartest ape has gone to college? Or that a bat child was found alive in a cave? And,
I mean, it spawned the musical Bat Boy.
Well, which was a delightful musical, by the way.
Great musical.
And she also says, and I totally agree with this, it was sad to leave us because it's the only tabloid that didn't dish on movie stars and spoiled starlets and skeletal models. You know, and I don't know if you saw the recent cover of another of those, like The Enquirer. The whole cover is celebrity fat cells. They show the legs and the buttocks and the stomachs of these celebrities and to show their cellulite.
Really?
Did you see that? It's really...
That sounds delicious.
Well, I mean, why do that? Who is that entertaining? Why is that... At least Weekly World News, they weren't out to really humiliate anybody or anybody that's actually living. As far as I know, yeah.
That Weekly World News was like the biggest... It was so much fun to see what could they make up next. I don't think anyone ever believed it. I couldn't believe that people believed it. But also, it was good as the ads, you know? Lose 40 pounds in 3.5 hours by just taking a pill. You know, and these were like, for me, I would like to know who ordered these products.
Well, he's dead now. Because he wanted to lose 120 pounds in 3 hours. So he took three pills and just didn't work out. Steve Harvey, not that Steve Harvey, different Steve Harvey of the L.A. Times, wrote, what a newspaper. It even scooped Southern California newspapers in 1994 when it revealed that the North Ridge earthquake had, quote, opened the gates of hell, and enabling at least 17 demons to escape from a gaping crack in the Golden State Freeway. I mean, God bless the Weekly World News. You know,
Well, you know what it is. Their sources, they'd always, if you ever read the Weekly World News, which I did at one point because I found it hilarious.
Yeah.
And what they would say, they'd have a source. They'd have a source tells them, which means any crackpot in the United States could call up the Weekly World News and tell them their cat was speaking to them with the voice of their dead grandmother.
Right. And
usually, they say a source says that this is what happened. And as long as someone believed it or said something is true, then they printed it.
And, of course, God knows, maybe they paid somebody $20 to be the source. If I give you $20, will you say that, you know, the raccoon in your backyard speaks four languages?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? Why not? I mean, if I give you another $5, can I call you professor? I will say, you know, the Weekly World News was never quite my thing, because it was never funny in those early years. It was weird. It was so straight in ridiculousness that they weren't trying to tell jokes the way The Onion is now. It was just dumb and incredibly pointless. But now I'm going to miss it and be kind of sorry.
But that was
gone.
The funny part of it, that it was pointless.
Yeah.
It was, why bother? Who would care? It's like, you know, Australian kangaroo, you know, remember that animals would like kill like busloads of children.
Yes. I don't know. I'm going to miss it a bit, but the three-eyed space alien in my basement is going to miss it a whole lot more. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I didn't know you had a basement.
Oh, yeah, and he moved down from the attic because, you know, we have extra pairs of glasses
because
for the eye.
Gates, he heard the gates all open.
The demons were after him. Oh, speaking of demons being... another terrible segue from Dave. I got to do...
I think you might need some music to think by.
No. No.
Not that one?
No, I was going to do demons, but these are the opposite of demons. I'm going to talk about Angel? Our sponsors before we get to Merv Griffin.
Angel?
And all that stuff. Yes. Angels on Dave's Gone By on WGBB Freeport, AM 1240, WGBB. Jeff, you want to help me out? So this way we'll get the sponsors out of the way, and then we'll talk about
Merv. Oh, the sponsors? We're going to talk about the sponsors?
Yes, from Sponsylvania.
Oh, well, of course, there's Fancy Schmancy Balloons, the number one balloon decorator in all the United States.
Now you're talking.
As told by the Weekly World News.
That's right. But what do they mean, really?
That's what I'm going to do is I'm going to quote the Weekly World News in my ad, say, number one balloon decorator, the best decorator ever.
On planet Venus.
Yeah. He decorated the universe. Who do you think put... Who can make the sun shine? The fancy schmancy man.
Because he fills it up with helium and makes the world get high. Somewhere, I don't know. But what's
who
the phone
can
number?
Take the sunrise? That was it.
Yeah, well, you can make a balloon rise. There you
That's
go. You
right.
can make a balloon rise for your bar mitzvah, your party, your wedding.
Confirmation, communion, graduation.
That's right.
Birthday parties, surprise parties, not surprise parties. If you want us to do a convention, we'll do that. If you want a space alien party, got it.
Balloons and centerpieces for the table.
Custom-made centerpieces. Right. Theme parties are specialty.
And also, although you don't do things like flowers and DJs, you can certainly hook up people and get
the whole
party done.
We can organize the party perfectly for you. And how would they get in touch with me?
516-797-3229.
Slower and more distinctly, please.
516-797-3229 for Fancy Schmancy.
Does that have anything to do with Lomans?
No.
Well, then who cares? Because Minuteman Press is next to Lomans Shoes.
Now, what can people get at Minuteman Press, Jeff?
They can get color copies on the brand new color copier. It's gorgeous.
Yes.
And you can copy the shoes.
And don't forget, if you're a Dave's Gone By listener and you go to
you get 20% off.
No, you get... careful, Jeff. It's 10% off. And you let Minuteman
But if you buy two things, it's 20% off.
No, it's still 10%.
No, you get 10% off the first item and 10% off the second item. That's 20%
off. Oh, I like your app. So if you buy 10 things...
it's all free!
Yeah, there you go. At Hewlett Minuteman Press, right next to the new Lomans shoe store, opposite the regular, normal Lomans clothing store.
Listen, Dave, you have to understand, Lomans is on one side of the street. Hewlett Minuteman Press is on across the street.
Right.
And then Lomans, because they're such a fabulous store, opened up a shoe store across the street from Lomans. And it's next to Minuteman Press. So how convenient can that be?
It is. I mean, you lost me there for a minute, but it is extremely convenient.
It's the Lomans
Shoes. Hewlett Minuteman Press, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. And thank you.
MortgagesRock.com.
MortgagesRock.com. Why MortgagesRock.com?
I have no idea.
Because, you know, you've been to their website.
It's a fabulous website. It teaches you how to get your own mortgage, how to get a mortgage for your friends and family. You can make money off of these mortgages. And it's just terrific.
It's a terrific site. MortgagesRock.com.
And they also have human beings who can answer your questions, too.
Yeah, by the way, it's not just a site. That's right. They have an office, a real office out in the South Shore of Long Island. Real people answering the telephone.
And they are helpful because I did go through them once.
Cool. And finally...
And it rocked.
I'm sorry?
It rocked.
MortgagesRock.com. PerformingArtsInsider.com. The Bible of Broadway. You can get 1 year... a Performing Arts Insider. That's 21 issues for $200. Now that's, I thought it was $75 off. It's actually $80 off now. If you're a Dave's Gone By listener, you want to subscribe to Performing Arts Insider this month only. It's $200 for 21 issues of everything.
That is less than $10 an issue.
That's right. And usually if you go by the store, it's like $14 an issue. So you can save some
money. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You could save all that money.
Yeah.
And then you can go get some shoes at Lomans.
That's right. You can get some shoes and wear them to Broadway with Performing Arts Insider tucked under your arm. Okay.
And copy it. If you want Minuteman Press
while
you're waiting for your mortgage.
MortgagesRock.com. Okay. We've given the sponsors more than they're due tonight. Let's move on. Hats off. Microphones down for Merv.
Aww.
Merv Griffin died at age 82 this week. It's funny, I was going to do just a thing
today,
about...
Today, he died this morning.
Was it yesterday? Was
this
today?
Morning, yeah.
Wow. Because 2 days ago, I was getting ready to talk about him and just wish him, to get better. Because the story came out that he was dying of cancer, his prostate cancer came back. And then, a few hours later, he was gone. So tell we talked briefly in the very beginning of the show, but say what he did, man.
Well, first of all, he was an actor. He did movies and television, and had what was his big hit song? I forgot. It was a novelty song.
Oh, no, sorry.
He had a really big novelty song, in the 40s or the 50s. But we'll find that out for you, because it was really odd that he...
Oh, my gosh, apparently. And it's a great song.
Yeah.
I've got a lovely bunch of
that's
coconuts.
It.
Did he write that, or did he just sing it?
I think he just sang it.
That's so wicked cool. That's a great song.
I know.
Oh, my God. I didn't see, even preparing for this, I didn't see that part. Wow. He that beats even creating Wheel of Fortune in Jeopardy. He wrote a lovely bunch of coconuts song, the late Merv Griffin. And, you know, he... Obviously, as we also said, he's multi, possibly billionaire. But
he was. He sold Merv Griffin Productions, his interest in Wheel of Fortune and
Jeopardy.
For a quarter of $1 billion.
Quarter of a
billion with a B.
Right.
$250 million.
And the genius of it, and profits. He didn't just throw them in. He kept getting stuff even after he sold it. That's the genius of it.
Well, and then he parlayed that into all sorts of... horse racing and hotels and stuff like that.
He bought the Beverly Hilton and the and Resorts International.
Yeah, he is actually worth well over $1 billion.
Well, no, right now he's worth about 3 cents. Because, well, no offense, but that's you can't take it with
worth
you.
Over $1 billion.
Yeah, his son Tony is getting all that.
How do you know?
Who else?
Well, he maybe had a love child. You know Merv.
If he had a love child, yeah. Well... Not
with Merv. And you know what's going to be written on his tombstone?
What?
There was an interview, and you'll quote it in all the newspapers. It says, "I will not be back after these commercials."
I don't think he's really going to do that. But
read it.
Oh, is he really going to do that?
Yes.
That's very funny. That's marvelous. I mean,
his
one thing is, are you angry at, or should we be angry at him that... For all the good he did, for all the money, for how nice he was, such a good, sweet interviewer, that he never came out. Is that something that should have been his personal business? Oh, hello. Hello! He was married, divorced, and then he was hit with a palimony suit in the 1990s, then he was hit with another sexual harassment.
Maybe he was just bisexual. I don't know. It never really... Didn't really occur to me to think about it, so I don't really... That didn't matter to me.
So it's okay that he, you know.
Well, if he was gay, then too bad he didn't come out. But I didn't think of him one way or another. He was never, you know, he was very apolitical.
He was good. He was just very good.
Yeah.
He was very good.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I mean, he, although he played it being like the kind of, like that, he had Bertrand Russell on his show. I mean, he had, like, great thinkers.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to get something a little more out there than just stupid celebrity talk. I mean, that's what most of television is. But every once in a while, he'd go out there and say, no, let me have someone really, really deeply interesting.
Well, he said he was good with every interview. I was listening to a couple of little bits to it today.
Uh-huh.
And he was good with every interview except one. Only one person ever made him a little nervous.
Who's that?
Rose Kennedy.
Hmm.
He said, because that woman controlled the whole, you know.
Yeah. All right, I believe that.
You don't see that? I see it. Rose Kennedy.
Oh, no, I get it. I mean, she was a domineering horse. How about, do you read anything about who his favorite interviewees of all time were or anything like that? Let's see if there's anything else we want to say about old Merv.
He's got a lovely bunch of coconuts.
Maybe, I think they've got some of his stuff on DVD. I think that'd be worth kind of checking out and seeing his style, as opposed to someone like Mike Douglas or Dinah Shore. They were all in that same range before the snarkiness of Letterman came along.
And the one thing that people will know, but he did write the Jeopardy theme song, the thinking music, that he wrote that.
He wrote Dum Dum Dum.
Yeah.
Oh, yay!
He wrote that in about 20 minutes, he said. he said it was a little piece. He just had it that he got to the piano. He graduated with his degree in... fine music and stuff like that.
Well, I also I wasn't reading it too closely earlier in the day, but one of the obits about him also had this interesting story where he was auditioning, I think it was a radio job, to be a singer, because he had a decent singing voice. And he
had a lovely bunch of coconuts.
Well, they were going to try him out to be like a romantic heartthrob crooner, and he walked in, and he was over 200 pounds, and he could see their faces fall when they looked at him, because he was not, the voice was not the image that they were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I mean, he ended up battling his weight his whole, until he stopped caring, until it didn't matter. Until he could buy up every scale in New York, Hollywood, and West Virginia.
I'm not fat. The scales are all wrong.
he's just big pocketed.
His money was weighing him down.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, bye bye, Merv Griffin. It's kind of a shame. I'm gonna miss him a little bit. By the way, it's 12:14 a.m. on this Monday morning. The gospel folks, I'm sure, will be here real soon to play some gospel music for you.
There's a little traffic out there because of the construction.
Oh, back with the construction again.
Yes, yes.
So let me also give a thank you to Chris Epting for being our wonderful guest on Dave's Gone By Tonight. He's the author of Led Zeppelin Crashed Here and The Ruby Slippers, Madonna's Bra, and Einstein's Brain, put out by Santa Monica Press. It's a lot of fun. It's really good. It's good bathroom reading, and I mean that in a nice way. You can flip through it. Great pictures. It's pretty neat. Let's see.
Where is that turd I flushed?
I don't know if people are specifically like, well, somewhere in the Pacific, I guess, by now. Oh, no.
Probably the Atlantic.
You're right.
Or most likely in a waste disposal plant. But I think the gospel people are real happy about listening to
No,
this.
I think that. Well, let's think of something to talk about.
What would Jesus do?
He would be listening to another radio station right about now. I'm sure about that. Shall we do, let's see, the weird but true?
Yes, what is weird but true?
Let's see. This is thanks to the New York Post and the Wire Services. A man in Tacoma, Washington
There's
is accused...
Tacoma, Washington?
There is a Tacoma, Washington. Is accused of having sex with a goat. But he says he was just trying to milk the animal.
You know what I think?
What?
It was a bad idea.
Bum, bum, shh. I guess he was horny like the goat.
High on the mountain is a lonely goat. Oh,
he ooh, ooh. A witness claims an apparently horny Arthur Lawton was getting along with a horny animal at Eatonville's Pioneer Farm Museum where he worked. Lawton, 63 years old, is the second man charged with bestiality since the state made it a crime. A man accused of having sex with a family pit bull was acquired in May. Could you imagine? I can't even conceive of trying to have any kind of relations with a pit bull. I don't even want to pet a pit bull. The idea of getting behind it or in front of it or under it for any kind of sexual pleasure, I wouldn't trust my nads to a pit bull, would you? If you would trust your nads to a pit bull, please give us a call at 631-888-8811. 631-888-8811. It's the Pit Bull Nads Show, ladies and gentlemen, at 12:32 a.m. on this Monday morning.
Do
okay.
you trust your nads to a pit bull? I need an infomercial.
I might trust it to my dachshund. Like, if I was really desperate on a desert island and I just had the dachshund.
But you don't need anything that long.
WGBB, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Hey, Dad, how are you? This is my father, Phil Lefkowitz, calling and actually still hanging tough to the bitter end of this program. How are you, Dad?
Would you trust your nads to a pit
to a pit bull?
Not this week. Not this lifetime, actually.
Aren't you proud of your son for creating a phrase like that?
I don't know where he gets his ideas.
He tells me from you.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and Dad, I'm sorry, but you can't win a prize because you're a relative. That's why.
And by the way, did you congratulate Joyce yet?
Oh, I was counting on it.
Well, millions of times, Dad has congratulated my wife
on the pregnancy.
Well, not on that. There's no.
Oh.
No, it's a lie. It's a joke. It's not a funny thing. How are
did
you?
Did you think it was funny the first several times I said it?
Not particularly.
Thank you, thank you, Dad. It's not a funny kind of a thing. So
I'm not becoming a fan.
So what are you up to, Dad? How was your week?
Not too bad.
Well, what do you have planned for this week?
Yeah.
Well, you know, having retired, I am milking it for all it's worth. I do the Times puzzle. I do the Newsday puzzle.
In ink or pencil?
In ink, as a matter of fact.
Oh, we're very sure of ourselves, huh?
Well, it's not so much that as it is that makes it easier to see.
Oh, okay. And how about the Sudoku? Do you like the Sudoku?
I used to. Now it's...
You're over the Sudoku.
I'd rather spend my time doing crosswords.
It's enough with the nines.
No,
what?
It's enough with the nines.
Yeah.
Everything is 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9. 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9.
Although you can do it with letters, too. I mean, it isn't the value of the number. It's just the how many times the number appears. So it isn't even that mathematical. You could do it with pictures. Nine different pictures. I'm itch there. But which you can't see. Only Jeff can see because he's looking straight at me. It's radio. I can scratch. I'm not scratching my nads either. I'm scratching near my nads. It's a near nad itch experience. Not that my father needed to know that, but now
he
does.
Thank you for sharing.
How's Mom?
She's sleeping.
Well, yeah.
Wake her up, could you?
God forbid she should.
Could you wake her up?
No. But
he puts in a tough day, you know.
Anyway, love you, Dad. Gotta run.
Same.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
That was fun. I like your father.
That's great. That's wonderful. And he's got a good radio voice.
He does. Why does he call in more often?
Well, because I don't normally do call-ins during the regular part of Dave's Gone By. But when we go overtime, we're very happy.
I'll have to find
call.
A good mug for your father.
A good what?
A mug, a drinking mug. Or
yeah.
Does he like bowling? I can give him a couple good games of bowling.
He hasn't bowled in a few years, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Not something he can do at this point. But,
right.
You know, there's other things.
We'll give him the bag, the Celebrate bag. He'll like that.
Oh, he might. You know, no, we can't give him an official gift because, you know, he's a relative.
Well, this is just for me to him.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And anyway, from me and Jeff to all of you, I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of Dave's Gone.
What number was that?
This was number 234, called Where in the World? So,
those gospel people.
I want to thank Chris Epting for talking to us, and please go out and get his books. I want to thank again my beloved and wonderful wife, Joyce. I want to thank Jeff Goodman for being so good this week. You were so charming and fun, just the best kind of Jeff Goodman.
And I
appreciate
didn't curse again.
No, you were great. You were absolutely lovely today. Thank you.
3 weeks in a row, no cursing.
Remember that there's more. You can find out so much more about this program by going to davesgoneby.org. How to advertise, how to hear older shows of this program, how to buy CDs of the show that you can give people, how to buy my book, all sorts of stuff.
How to send Dave money.
Please. davesgoneby.org. Jeff and I will be back next Sunday, August 19th, with the 235th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then.
Boy, it's just like we're finishing up on the 234th, isn't it?
Well, we were supposed to finish up on the 234th 45 minutes ago, but hey, I love doing the overtimes. It's a joy for. I wish we could stay longer, but honestly, we can't. So, till next week, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night, hoping that all your locations are happy landmarks.
And don't get your OJMS in a twist.
And
gone by.
Oh, I want you to think I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. There they are standing in a row. Good night, Merle.